Coming up later this hour, Fernando Tatis apologizes for the world to hear, takes responsibility for what sparked an 80-game suspension. Maybe this is what the Padres need to hear to trust him a little bit more. How does he earn that, and why is he having shoulder surgery? Yet another weird twist with Fernando Tatis, the young superstar for the San Diego Padres, who are not making up any ground on the Dodgers in the NL West, but could end up with a National League wild card. We will talk NL. We will also talk a little more about what else is happening in Major League Baseball. It's a couple of fun races that are coming into focus as we round the quarter pole, so to speak, and get set for this final month of the season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, we're looking for your questions for Ask Amy Anything. And at the same time, you can send them to our Facebook page, although I don't suppose you need to post them in both places. Maybe your persistence will pay off. Potentially, that persistence will pay off. It certainly has been a turnaround for the Yankees. After winning just 10 of 30 games since the All-Star break, they've now put together a modest three-game win streak, and Aaron Judge is at the heart of it.
Pitch hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Oh, what a Judgian blast. It went over the grandstand and way up in the bleachers. All rise. Here comes the Judge. Boy, I mean, he hit one out of sight in left field, and the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
A good way to finish, you know, what's been a tough stretch for us, to finish off the homestand with three wins against three great opponents and pitchers. Good way to head into the off day.
Aaron Boone has got to be happy. The team is putting together a bit of a rally and is still protecting that division lead in the AL East. We are pleased to welcome Sweeney Murdy, who covers Yankees and has been a longtime insider for not only the flagship, but our New York affiliate, WFAN. Sweeney, ever since Aaron Boone got a little explosive and pounded the table and got angry and said the Yankees were underperforming and that they had what it takes to be a better team, they have not lost. What has changed since that moment on Saturday?
Yeah, I think he just said it after the game on Tuesday night. He said, you know, we're scoring some runs. That helps, right? They scored four runs exactly, and they pitched well enough to make it hold up 3 days in a row. So they were scoring one and none for a lot of that time. So they're not all the way back yet, but you are, you know, listen, they were going so bad, Amy, you're just looking for wins any way you can get them, and that's what they're getting right now. They're getting wins any way you can get them. Aaron Judge has hit a couple of home runs. They're scratching across some runs. And even with a bullpen that's kind of, you know, out of shape and out of sorts right now, they're managing to hold these leads for the last couple of days. So things are going right when, for a month, everything was going wrong.
Mm. Is it sustainable when you look at the pattern that they've had over the past couple of games?
This isn't the best version of them. You know, this is what they're doing right now to win a few games. The best version of them is a lot more players contributing offensively. It has them in a better state with the bullpen. I think that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, their bullpen was in kind of disarray to the fact that, you know, it's kind of a good thing they didn't have any leads, because I don't think they knew how to hold them. It really wasn't in good shape. You know, 3 days in a row, they've actually held two-run leads, which is pretty amazing. So I think they're getting back slowly. Giancarlo Stanton is due back before Thursday's game in Oakland. Clay Holmes, who was an all-star this year, is due back next week before the series starts in Anaheim. And if he's, you know, if he's sound mechanically as well as physically, then hopefully that leads them back in the right direction. Stanton back in the lineup certainly helps lengthen the lineup and pushes some guys down to the bottom that maybe put them in with some more comfortable spots. They were remarkably healthy in the first half of the season, and everything seemed to be going right. So when they deal with a couple of injuries, they ran into a couple of problem areas, and maybe that'll get them back in the right direction again as they get healthy bodies.
Frankie Montas is able to pitch into the sixth and only allows two runs to the Mets tonight. That's certainly a turnaround from what they've gotten from him so far. How critical is he to their success moving forward?
It was a great start for him, considering how badly it started when he's probably one pitch away from having a blow up on him in the first inning. And some of these games the Yankees have dealt with in the last few weeks, their starter would have that one bad inning. You know, Garrett Cole, anybody. They'd give up 3, 4, 5 runs in an inning, and the way the Yankees scored lately, well, that's too much for any team. You know, you fall behind like that, that's too much. Montas had two on and two out, managed to get out of it in the first inning without a single run scoring. And that was huge. He threw 27 pitches in the first inning. I mean, he's literally, a handful of pitches away from just losing the lead and not getting out of the first inning. So major props to him for getting out of that, getting into the sixth, and getting in a position where they can win that game.
Not to mention the double play to end the second, also a big deal that seemed to fire him up. So what are the chances, Sweeney, that the Yankees brass, or even the Yankees clubhouse, are paying attention to what Jordan Montgomery is doing with the Cardinals?
Well, they have a pretty long history with him. I think they obviously know what's happening right there. You know, the thing is, though, let's remember, they haven't been on this crazy losing streak because they haven't pitched well. The pitching is actually straightened itself out from the starting rotation. Starting rotation for about the last three turns now has actually been pretty good. They weren't scoring. And guess what? When Jordan Montgomery was pitching here, they weren't scoring for him either. So that's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is scoring runs and relief pitching. They're actually okay lately in the starting rotation. So, listen, it's their bad timing and bad luck that that they're on this run right now while Montgomery is dealing and the guy that they traded him for is hurt, right? They knew that going in. Harrison Bader is the center fielder they've been looking for pretty much since last winter, and he just happens to be hurt right now, and they made the deal with a large degree of confidence that they're going to get him back in September. And when they do, he's the last piece in that whole defensive shuffle that the Yankees made when they brought in Jose Trevino and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, moved Gleyber Torres back to second base. They tried to get strong defensively up the middle. When Bader gets healthy again, he's the last piece there. It moves Aaron Judge back to right field where he's a better fit. It will move Giancarlo Stanton back to a DH role where he's a better fit. And, we'll see if they can get that. Bader believes he can really be a lot closer to being ready when you get close to Labor Day here. Not saying he's going to come back on Labor Day, but he really feels he's going to be in a better position to get himself close to being ready at that stage. So we'll see how that goes over the course of the next 10 days here.
Sweeney Murdy is the Yankees reporter for our New York affiliate and the Yankees flagship, WFAN, in New York, and he's with us after hours on CBS Sports Radio. The Yankees obviously set this unbelievable pace and standard for themselves in the first half, so maybe it wasn't realistic to expect them to keep that up. However, the fans actually were booing Brian Cashman and other members of the front office at the day in which they're retiring Paul O'Neill's number over the weekend. How were the crowds these last couple nights then?
The crowds were actually playoff caliber the last couple of nights. I mean, they're the largest crowds the last two nights for the Mets series that the Yankees have had in 9 years.
Wow.
So they are, and listen, a lot of it's Mets fans too, obviously, right? Because their team's in first place. It shows you the excitement. This is playoff atmosphere. You got two first place teams coming here, and they played some tight, tense games. I think it was important for some of the newer players in the Yankees to see that. You know, Frankie Montas, Andrew Benintendi. You know, Benintendi's played in the World Series, played in Boston. He knows a little bit about it, but it's important to see that perform. You know, Ron Marinaccio got some big outs and Wandy Peralta got some big outs, and Clark Schmidt got some big outs. And these are guys who have not been in, you know, in that kind of atmosphere. So to be able to play there and perform in that spot, I think, was helpful. Good crowds, big crowds, energetic crowds. Yeah, I think, you know, that probably helped play a little bit of part in getting them focused and getting in the right direction.
A massive roar there at the end when they get out of that bases-loaded jam to wrap up the game in the ninth. The Aaron Judge piece of this is so intriguing, right? Because it seems like once they got into some trouble and only won 10 of 30 games, then people stopped asking about the future because they're more concerned about the present. I like what he had to say on, I guess it would have been Monday night, when he hit a home run and someone asked him about a drought. And he said, home run drought? I don't know what you're talking about. He continues to handle this all in stride, even though we know a couple months down the road, regardless of what happens, there's this big question looming about their star in the face of their franchise.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good retort for him to say that, but because I think he's been deflecting from his home run pace and whatever race we want to make it to, 61, 70, 73, whatever we want to do it. He's been deflecting off of that all year, so I think that's probably another way of him deflecting that and saying home run drought. But make no mistake, he knows how many he's hit. He knows how many he needs. He knows how, like, this plays in a contract year. he knows all about that. He knows he went 9 games without one. How he portrays it and how, you know, what he's actually knowing, I think, are two different things. But good for him. That's what he needs to get through this and not have to keep answering. Listen, I made my own run at him. I had a conversation the other day about stuff that, you know, about chasing home run records. And he deflected then, too. That's what he needs to do because he knows these questions are here and they're coming. And it's, you know, it probably doesn't do him any good to entertain them, especially at a time when the team has not been playing well. So, but listen, he hit home runs 2 days in a row. And guess what, Amy? The Yankees won both of those games. That's not a coincidence. They need him to get going again.
Sweeney Murdy covers the Yankees for their flagship and our New York affiliate, WFAN. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. 3 straight wins for the Yanks. They now sit at 76 wins. And some of the questions that have been asked about the team would have been just unheard of in the first half of the season, like Aaron Boone's status, but I keep hearing chatter about it. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that they do peter out in the playoffs and don't end up in the World Series. Is he brought back, in your opinion, or would they make a change?
He just signed a new 3-year contract at the end of last season. He's not going anywhere. This team does not operate that way anymore. A few teams do. You know, you don't pay a guy not to manage with 2 years left on his contract, 3 years left on his contract. There aren't very many teams that operate quite in that fashion. And the Yankees haven't for a very long time. They decided last year when they got bounced in the first round, you know, in the wild card game, that they still liked the direction they were in with Aaron Boone as their manager. And I think everything that they've said has backed that up, that the overall record and some of the reasons behind why they have slumped lately, they think have legitimate reasons behind them, not simply this guy is not the right manager. Now, we're trying to say, what happens if they lose here? You have to get there first. You have to show me. You know, you can't. Listen, if you're going to tell me they're going to lose the next 40 games in a row, yeah, I think maybe they might fire their manager. But are they really going to lose the next 40 games in a row?
No.
So I think that you have to. You know, we can paint these things and say, what do you think is going to happen? Like, I don't know. But I can tell you that there is not a lot of momentum for the Yankees to fire a manager after the first year of his contract, because they decided to bring him back after what they went through last year, a season in which they did not hit all season long and lost in the first and only playoff game. So when they are looking like they're at a pace that, okay, it's a reduced pace, they'll only win 98 or 99 games. But there's nothing that tells me that is going to signal to them that they need to change what has been their course of action in history for the last couple of decades now. and like telling me that they think, you know, you'd have to paint the bleak picture for me. I have to see it play out before I tell you, oh, yeah, this guy's job is in jeopardy, because nothing indicates that it is.
So then the questions must amuse you, or the chatter, because it certainly comes up almost every time this team stubs its toe.
Well, I understand, because like it's from a generation who watched George Steinbrenner do this. But, you know, frankly, Hal Steinbrenner talked about this a year ago, you know, when he explained, you know, not everything my dad did back then worked or was well-received. He got criticized for it. Let's remember that there was, when the announcement was made, and you saw this, if you guys watched episode one, I think, of The Captain, you saw some of the history of George Steinbrenner in the era leading up to Derek Jeter and the rest of that dynasty team. When it was announced in 1990 that George Steinbrenner was going to be suspended from baseball, the crowd at Yankee Stadium cheered. He was the problem. They cheered that he was going to be suspended. So I think we forget about that. His way of changing managers and changing everything didn't work. It was stability that worked. And that's, you know, I think that gets lost nowadays. But it's not lost on Hal Steinbrenner, who said very frankly last year that he doesn't respond the way his father did for a variety of reasons, and included, you know, just reminding us that it didn't always work, and he was often criticized for it.
Yes, Sweeney Murdy is with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. Before I let you go, what are a couple of other storylines, either individual or team, around the majors that you're really interested in seeing play out the next 5 weeks of this regular season?
The Orioles trying to make the playoffs. You know, I think that's an interesting thing here. Where does the American League with Houston currently holding the best record, if the Yankees can jump up there again and figure out how to wrestle home field away, I think that's very important. The Central is really interesting right now with Minnesota, Cleveland, and Chicago really fighting there. And only one of them making the playoffs at this rate with, two AL East teams and or maybe three, Seattle all in the wild card mix. You know, that's all pretty interesting here. The National League East is interesting because the Braves are starting to play like defending champions again and
right, closing
a little gap on the Mets. The Dodgers, the Dodgers are ignoring this idea that you can't play at 115 win pace, right? So they're going at that right now. But listen, there are extra rounds and extra games to play in the playoffs. It doesn't mean that you're advancing straight to the World Series. So there's a lot. It changes. You know, there's still so much that changes as soon as you get to the playoffs and start facing other good teams in these win or go home kind of games. That part is kind of interesting here too.
Sweeney Murdy covers the Yankees for their flagship and our New York affiliate, WFAN. And the Yankees have now put together this modest three-game win streak and 49,000-plus on hand, along with Sweeney at Yankee Stadium to watch Tuesday night's victory over the Mets. You can find him on Twitter at Yankees, WFAN. It's always good to grab a couple minutes, Sweeney. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Amy. Appreciate it.
So there, your question's answered about Aaron Boone and whether he gets Das Boot if the Yankees do not live up to expectations. Sweeney says, no way. This current regime, this Steinbrenner is not going to make that move. But of course, there's a long way to go. Anything can and will happen over the course of a 162-game baseball season and the playoffs. All right, coming up, Fernando Tatis. He's apologized. Is this the first step toward making things right with the Padres? Man, talk about a long way to go. He's barely scratched the surface on his PED suspension. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We see your questions for Ask Amy Anything. That is now about 45 minutes away. So chop, chop. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
In two to Tatis. Here's the pitch from Smith. That's it in the air out to deep center field. Duvall's going back. Looking up. This one is going to go. home run, Fernando Tatis Jr. And the Padres are back in front in the seventh. It is 6-5, San Diego.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Fernando Tatis is not hit a home run this week or this month or this season. Nope, not going to be hitting home runs for quite a while because he is early in the stages of an 80-game suspension for using performance-enhancing drugs, or I guess more appropriately in his case, since we don't actually know what the issue was. We just know the substance for which he popped positive. He has tested positive for a banned substance. Not just a substance banned by Major League Baseball, but a substance banned by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and one that has been on the list for a long time, or nearly 20 years, actually, when it comes to the baseball protocols. And for the first time on Tuesday, he sat and spoke to reporters. I don't know who timed it. Somebody did. 250 seconds is what I've seen online. This is at Petco Park. And he had a bunch of microphones stuck in his face. He did not have a script, according to those who were there. And he was down. His facial expressions, his body language, all of that seemed to indicate that he's still processing. He's still dealing. And in this case, he's still accepting the fact that he failed really everyone associated with the Padres, not to mention those people who know and love him personally.
I fell to the front office of the San Diego Padres, Peter Seiler, AJ Preller. I have fell to every fan of this city. I have fell to my country. I have fell my family, parents, but there's no other one to blame than myself. I haven't made the right decisions on this past 2 weeks, month, even starting at the beginning of the year. I have made a mistake, and I have regretted every single step.
I made a mistake, and I've regretted every single step, or I regret every single step. So he lists the number of people, he lists groups, including his teammates and his family, those that he failed by testing positive for this banned substance. He also vowed to make amends. He vowed to fix this, to get back into a position where his teammates and the fans can trust him.
It's going to be a very long process to gain everybody's trust again, to gain that love back that I have stabbed straight to the heart, to every fan, to every baseball fan. I'm learning. I'm maturing. But it's with actions. It's with action that I'm going to start beginning doing. And it's action that's going to speak for myself in the future. So there's going to be a whole new story out there. And there's going to be changes out there. And it starts today.
Tatis did have AJ Preller, who's the president of baseball operations, right there with him. And so he wasn't by himself alone on this island of media. He went on to say, I've seen how my dreams have turned into my worst nightmares. And he said that when he found out about the 80-game suspension that was on the horizon, so when he found out that he'd tested positive and that baseball was about to hand down the suspension, quote, I freaked out. He said that in meetings with his teammates in the Padres clubhouse, it was actually earlier on Tuesday, right before he addressed the media, that there was a lot of tough love. But he felt like there was great communication, that his teammates were fair, and that they are giving him a chance. Now, he did stick by his initial claim that this positive test was triggered by a medication that he was using in the Dominican, one that's not available in the U.S. Not necessarily ringworm, so he didn't blame it on ringworm, but that he'd had a skin infection for quite a while and that the Padres medical staff was not the one that gave him this medication. So we can't blame it on the team, that it was something he picked up in the DR. And he said he did not make sure the medication was clear or did not contain a banned substance. He just took it, and he labeled that a stupid mistake. There's no excuses. There's no excuses. I need to do a way better job on what is going inside my body. There's no excuse for these actions. So he says it wasn't about PEDs. Said over and over that it's because he was careless and he was reckless. It wasn't about boosting performance or recovering from injury more quickly. And remember, he had wrist surgery in March and was in a rehab assignment, was getting closer to returning to the Padres. Now we find out he needs shoulder surgery, but this is an injury that's lingered and has bothered him for a good portion of 2021. So nothing related to the motorcycle accident, though I suppose that could have exacerbated it. He did think about appealing and actually went about the whole processing of this and thinking about the appeal without the knowledge of the team. So kept it from the team for quite a while. But then ultimately, his people, not the team, but the people around him, advised him and convinced him that he wasn't going to win an appeal, so he should start serving that suspension immediately. Again, spoke with his teammates, had a private meeting in the clubhouse, absorbed what they had to say, and then apologized for his failures, for his stupid mistakes, and says he's going to rewrite the story. So what was Manny Machado's reaction to Tatis?
Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, we're all human beings, and, you know, we all make mistakes. And, you know, it just sucks that he was, you know, in our situation, in his situation, you know, it's all over the world. But we're all human beings, we all make mistakes, and, you know, we all forgive, and we all move forward and try to learn from those mistakes. And, you know, ultimately, that's all we can do.
So Manny Machado was the one who was bold about saying, we don't trust him right now, he can't be trusted. And then, hey, we've got what we need in this clubhouse. We heard that with Machado as well as with Clevinger, Mike Clevinger. But now, having heard from Fernando Tatis, I can understand these guys would want to rally around him. Yeah, they're moving forward without him. But his apology seems sincere. He seems contrite. As I mentioned, his body language was such that he looked so dejected and disappointed and angry at himself still, but is determined to rewrite the story moving forward. Coming up top of the hour, your chance to ask Amy anything. So you can send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. That way, producer Jay can see them, or to our Facebook page. Did you hear the story that Dana White told about Tom Brady and how things could have gone so differently when he was determined to leave the New England Patriots? We've got it. There's always a Gronk element to this, isn't there?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Off the play fake, Brady looking to throw. Back in the end zone, wide open, Gronkowski. 23-0, Tampa Bay is on top with 7:38 to play in the third quarter.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We can't go back and rewrite history, nor can I imagine that the Buccaneers want to, that Tom Brady or Rob Gronkowski want to. But we now know there could have been an alternate ending to Tom Brady's career. The New England Patriots weren't going to be able to keep him, but as it turns out, there were more than one or two, even three four teams. In fact, there was another team that was damn close to getting Tom Brady into town. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Just a few minutes left for you to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. We've bumped it up just a little bit, moving some stuff around. And so you will find that if you delay and you procrastinate, your question will not make it under the wire, will not be part of producer Jay's group. So he's looking for creative. And actually, if you make him laugh or make him smile, you have a better chance right now because he's not feeling the mirth or the joy this particular edition of The Hump Show. So send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or to our Facebook page. This is probably going to make you laugh, Jay. I'll just read this one to you because it's funny. Chuck wants to know, will you get a new theme song?
Theme song?
I'm assuming he's referring to American Woman, and the answer is hell to the gnaw. Nope. That is the song. We've been using it since the very beginning, and it's not going to change. And I'm thinking those 90 seconds, maybe not even your 60 seconds that you have to hear it every weeknight, or if it's early morning for you, is probably not going to ruin your life. So no, I'm associated with it, and I'm not changing
it. It's like it's a sitcom.
Nor am I changing the version that we use. People ask me that sometimes, too. Why don't you use this version or that version? Because I like the one we've got. So, Chuck, the answer is no. Free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Once again, last minute questions for Ask Amy on either Twitter or Facebook. Dana White was a guest, of course, on The Gronks. Speaking of sitcoms, it's an alternate broadcast, similar to the Mannings, the Monday Night Mannings, I call them. It's an alternate broadcast that runs along with UFC fights. And apparently it's not going to be every time, but when there are UFC broadcasts featuring a fight card, you got the Gronks, who are essentially a running stream of consciousness. It's the brothers and friends on ESPN and ESPN Plus.
Just what I always wanted.
I will love him and squeeze him and call him George.
I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
So Dana White, as the president and face of UFC, was a guest on The Gronks on Saturday night, and he was asked by Rob Gronkowski, got to be careful, which you can't just say Gronk because there's many of them. He was asked by Rob Gronkowski to tell the story of how Tom Brady almost landed in Vegas. And I've watched this broadcast, this part of the broadcast. Dana White was taken, he was caught off guard. He was taken aback, but he told the story.
I worked to put that deal together for Brady and Gronk to come to the Raiders. And it was almost a done deal. And at the last minute, Gruden blew the deal up and said that he didn't want him. And all hell broke loose, man. It was crazy. And Brady was already looking at houses, and it wasn't being said yet that Gronk was coming. So Las Vegas would have had Brady and Gronk the year that the Bucs won the Super Bowl, except Gruden blew the deal up. And there's so much story that goes along with this behind the scenes. And I was never going to tell that story till Gronk just said it. But
And Dana,
let me tell you what,
exactly
Brady was
what
not
happened,
happy.
And you just told the story.
Wow.
I don't know how you could not laugh when there's a bunch of other Gronks all laughing at the same time. So we hear Dana White say he brokered the deal. He was the one who was convincing Brady and, I mean, Gronk would have been an easy sell, but convincing Brady and Gronk to play for the Raiders after leaving the New England Patriots. And Brady was sold on it. He was ready to go. He was even looking at houses, at homes there in Vegas. And according to White, at the last minute, John Gruden, obviously no longer the coach of the Raiders, but at the time was early in a 10-year deal to coach the team. Gruden blew the deal up, said he didn't want him, and all hell broke loose, man. That's a quote from Dana White. It was crazy. So Las Vegas would have had Brady and Gronk the year the Bucs won the Super Bowl, except Gruden blew the deal up. Now, Gronk confirms it, but I did hear Rob Gronkowski say this. He's glad it didn't happen, that now he wouldn't change a thing. So instantly, when I was listening to this, I was reminded that Tom Brady himself went on his own show, but also went on this podcast, or I guess it was a TV show, HBO's The Shop, and actually confirmed that there was another team that was very interested, and it wasn't just the Bucks or bust. You let me know, Jay, if you... Okay. Or, oh.
I had it, and he dropped a hard F-bomb, and I just, yeah.
You let me know when you bleep it out, and we can use it. Okay, so how about we let you hear more from Dana White then? Because later in a press conference for UFC, he actually doubled down on this. So this wasn't just some story he was telling for entertainment on the Gronks.
I didn't want to talk about that, no, but he sort of sucked me into it on live TV. Yeah, it's true. And you know, I talked Brady into playing for the Raiders. And Gronk was coming with him. And they were negotiating the deal, and they were really close to getting it done. And then Gruden pulled the deal, and Brady was not happy about it. Neither was I. And yeah, and that's that. He went to the Buccaneers and won the Super Bowl. I don't know. Box there. I wanted Brady at the, you know what I mean? Crazy. But yeah, it's true. And I thought that I would never tell that story publicly, but what the hell Gronk was doing tonight that he brought that up. But yeah.
Well, it doesn't surprise me at all that Rob Gronkowski brought it up, because you give him a microphone and him and his brothers, they're all jazzed up, the adrenaline, they're excited about fight night. Of course, this kind of stuff is going to come out because Gronk does not have a V-chip at all. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So White doubles down on this press conference and says, yeah, I never thought I'd tell the story. I thought it was going to be something that we would keep private and keep under wraps. But yeah, that was true. And as I say, Gronk confirmed it on the broadcast as well. So what about Derek Carr? What does this mean for him? Now, he's dealt with a lot of trade rumors and speculation over the course of his career with the Raiders, first in Oakland, now in Vegas. And he was asked whether or not he's immune to stories like this, except there's never been a story like this about Tom Brady.
It is what it is. You know, for me, like, I didn't even hear about it. We actually had within the building someone lost a family member. So, like, I was so immersed in that and just talking to that person and that kind of stuff that it was a moment to really put things in perspective.
At this point, he's one of those quarterbacks like a Tua who just has to roll with the punches when it comes to trades, when it comes to speculation, when it comes to him constantly being replaced by another quarterback. Derek Carr's not the problem for the Raiders. He hasn't been the problem for the Raiders. He may not be the best quarterback in the NFL, but he's above average as a QB. And he's good for 4,500 yards and 20-plus touchdowns. Maybe more than that. All right, so Jay tells me he's cleaned up Tom Brady.
There was a story in free agency. One of the teams, they were interested, and all of a sudden, they weren't interested at the very end. I was sitting there thinking, you're sticking with that motherfucker? Are you serious?
So, now, there's no way to know. He did not confirm that this was the Raiders and Derek Carr. there was a lot of speculation that it was the Niners and Garoppolo that he was talking about because the Niners were also interested. But now knowing what we know from Derek White and Rob Gronkowski, the fact that the Raiders, we know, were close. According to Dana, this was a done deal. Those are his words, not mine. So if it was a done deal, wouldn't that jive with Brady saying they were interested until the end and then they weren't? Ouch, though. If you're Derek Carr and that, I mean, we know Brady's uber competitive. We get it. But all this time, people thinking it's Jimmy Garoppolo, and instead it might have been Derek Carr that he was referring to. Ask Amy Anything is next. It's After Hours, The Hump Show, CBS Sports Radio.